Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Welcome to another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. I'm your host, Kevin Finn, and it's actually a warm day here in Atlanta, so I think we scared away all the cold. Well, we got a great show for you today, and we got a studio full. Later in the show, we're going to be talking with Tracy Ruth Creedy. I hope I didn't butcher that. I got it right.
No one gets it right.
The Senior Vice President of S4B Social. And we'll also be talking with Andrew Letcher, Executive VP and Branch Manager of Studley, and Jim Reese, President and CEO of Atlanta Mission. But first up on Atlanta Business Radio, we're going to be talking with Keith McDermott, CEO and founder of Hydration Station. And I've only heard good things from my friends about your outfit out there.
Well, that's great to hear.
And I've also liked you on Facebook. So,
why, thank you very much. I mean, I was just watching something on Frontline about this is the generation of like. It's crazy what social media can do for business.
So you have a really cool business. Tell me how you had an idea to start this and really found this concept. It's not an oxygen bar. It's sort of really interesting kind of thing.
Well, it was purely anecdotal. I was my last job, I was doing a lot of business travel, a lot of working with different cities around the country, working on business development and a lot of entertaining. So got me a lot, very run down, and had a good buddy that is a physician who has actually become the medical director of our business, an ER doctor who suggested that I try IV fluids.
Okay.
And it really is something that cures what ails you, a lot of different things, whether it's a jet lag or a flu or what have you. So I gave it a shot and went in there, was feeling about half past dead, and the next day, actually later that day, I felt 100%. I mean, I was ready to get back on the road. I was ready to work. And about a month after that, a little less, I went to a wedding down in Florida. Mm-hmm. And the night before the wedding, the rehearsal dinner, we got a little after it. And we were playing golf the next morning around 9 a.m. And the groom had the foresight to hire a nurse to come in and provide IV fluids and some medications. Genius. And vitamins prior to our playing golf. And I did it again. And same result, and thought to myself, well, if nobody's doing this, I should look into it, see what necessitates or what we need to do to open a business that specializes in this type of therapy, and just sort of took a leap of faith, and the rest is history.
All right, so who are your main customers? Obviously, anyone after a late night of drinking, all my friends, they swear by it. They after going out and they have to go do something the next day, they go in and they feel great. But also, like, most people don't get enough fluids, period, sure, throughout the day. So who do you guys target customer? And I know you guys are all about health. So.
Yeah, I mean, I would like to just go on record and say we do not encourage the overindulgence of alcohol.
Not at all.
But we're there for you if you take that into your own hands. So. But we work with a lot of athletes. We work with triathletes, marathon runners, people that are training for those events or are recovering from them. Mm-hmm. So the main thing is that a lot of people are not hydrated. You know, you've always heard drink 8 glasses of water. A lot of people don't do that. Most people's diet is made up of Diet Coke and coffee, you know, just to keep themselves going. And people work out and they're just borderline, you know, very dehydrated. So we offer an alternative. We like to tell people that this can be a regimen, part of your daily regimen, monthly regimen, weekly regimen. And excuse me.
No problem.
We, it's just a good idea to be hydrated. You feel a lot better. We also offer a number of different vitamin treatments and recipes that can help with all sorts of different things, ranging from PMS to athletic performance to, you know, just an overall well-being, sense of well-being.
Definitely. So are there any misconceptions you want to get off the table? I know, like, before, this seems like a new good health trend, and I know, like, chiropractic back in the day, the doctors were talking bad about that and doing this. Is there anything there that you'd like to talk about?
Well, I mean, certainly this is something that's been around for many, many years. You watch an old World War II movie, and the first thing they do if somebody gets injured is hang a bottle of fluids. Now we use, you know, bags of fluids. But this is something that is very, very safe. We're overseen by our medical director, who's a physician. He is state certified, state board certified. And then all the folks that provide the treatment are paramedics, nurses, physician assistants, all done in a very sterile environment. One-use needles, everything is thrown away, okay, medically disposed of correctly. It's a very, you know, folks just need to see it and trust it, because it is, you know, we've gone the extra mile to make sure that we're doing things the right way.
All right. Well, I want to know, we love entrepreneurial spirit. Where do you go? Everyone has a good idea, and you had an idea. You're like, wait, this could be a cool idea. Most people leave it there. They're like, oh, that'd be a really cool idea. And then someone else does, and they say, well, that was my idea down the road. How did you get from your idea to actually just going out there and starting this business? Because that takes a lot of gusto.
Well, it helped that I think I had sort of run my course with my my old job. You know, I enjoyed it. I loved the company, but I was ready to do something new, and I've always had that entrepreneurial spirit. I think, you know, the first thing you need to do is make sure that there's a market out there for whatever you're trying to produce or whatever concept you've come up with. You know, run it by some people that you trust. See if there are some other business owners or entrepreneurs that you can bounce your idea off of. And then, I mean, the big thing is if you have your own money to start it, that's great. Mm-hmm. But if you can get some other folks that are willing to invest, and especially if you can create a good team of people around you, you know, folks that bring something to the table other than just money, that can really make for a successful business. I mean, that's the way we have done it, and that's the way we continue to do it as we're going out and looking for additional capital raises. So,
okay. Well, how have you guys really been marketing? I know through social media is how I found a lot of my friends, and you guys are getting a lot of exposure, definitely, and you're a cool concept. It's sort of virally catching on, but what have you guys been doing just out there just pushing along?
I mean, that's a great deal of what we've done. I mean, we've done sort of the traditional marketing materials, brochures, hats and T-shirts, and giving them to people that – you know, maybe the influencers and the folks that are touching the most people, working with the gym owners and the trainers and the Concierge Society of Atlanta, folks that own restaurants, folks that are just the influencers and connectors in the city of Atlanta. And then a lot of it has been, let's give it away. Let's provide treatments to those people. So they can, you know, it's a lot easier to say, hey, come on in for a free treatment.
Julio Jones came in last week. And
right, exactly. And if we can give them a treatment and then post their picture on Facebook or post their picture on Instagram, that goes a long way. And it doesn't appear or feel like an advertisement as much as buying a billboard.
Well, it's a testimonial. It's not really an advertisement.
Correct. And, you know, the word of mouth stuff, it's as old as the cavemen, and it continues to be your most effective way of doing it. Now, word of mouth may be along the lines of cyberspace, but word of mouth and a testimonial, to use your word, is priceless.
Definitely. So, how does this work? How does someone sign up for this? How's the business model work with this?
Well, we've done something a little bit different. We have a membership program that folks, especially the athletes and folks that are training, can come in and they'll get their first bag of fluids each month. They get two vitamin B treatments. They get discounted rates. So it helps to get a lot of people under the tent and get a lot of people coming back week after week, month after month. Additionally, I mean, it's basically we've offered something. You don't have to do a certain package. You don't have to use a specific medication. We give an a la carte option. So if you just want to do or take a holistic approach with just fluids and vitamins, we offer that. If you have a migraine, we have oxygen. Okay. We have Toradol, which is an anti-inflammatory for pain. We've tried to be all things to all people with regard to a specific type of medical treatment, holistic treatment, or preventative treatment.
All right. Well, what are your plans for the future? Are you thinking about, this seems like it could be a great franchise kind of model. I don't know if you thought that far ahead, or are you guys going to take this on the road? Are you going to have like sort of a remote thing that people can hire you to be at events? What's the next step?
All the above. I mean, we're opening our second location in Brookhaven. Our first location's on Peachtree and Buckhead. We are building a mobile unit that is going to go to events like music festivals, the Masters in April, that can, you know, it, as opposed to just throwing up a three-sided tent with folding chairs and folding table, this is something that's going to instill confidence in the folks that are going to take
luxury.
The treatment.
They can, okay.
And well, just, you know, something that's solid, something that is not just thrown together, and something that you would feel comfortable getting a medical treatment in. So, but yeah, we're doing things on the road. We're talking to people in other cities. I mean, we've had inquiries from over 80 cities about franchising, and you know, that's
huge.
Yeah, it's been pretty huge. So there's a lot that goes into franchising, which I'm sort of in the process of learning about right now, from a legal standpoint, from
to getting your systems in place, to probably even how the people put the needle into the arm for the IV.
Exactly. I mean, the thing about franchising is you want to create something that is very replicable, something that is, you know, for lack of a better term, or actually a really good term that I've heard, a business in a box, something that you don't have to think, if you're a franchisee, what color the paint is going to be on the walls, what the floor covering is going to be, what type of needles and catheters and fluids you're going to use. All that is presented to you. So we're developing, and we've developed and orchestrated a system that is able to be copied and replicated and done all over the country.
Very awesome. I love it. Have you guys thought about maybe like schools? I think about like every year you hear it's football season, high schools, there's some kid that has something horrible happen because of dehydration. Have you thought about maybe having schools be able to sign up and have their kids just have passes so they can come in and get treatment after football and all that?
I don't know if high school is necessarily the direction that we'd want to take. We've certainly talked to some of the universities and professional franchises around town and around the country. We have a cutoff of 18 years
old.
Okay,
all right.
We've had some parents who've had inquiries, but honestly, we feel like our sweet spot is probably 18 and over.
Okay.
Most of the people that we are dealing with really are 18 to 49, very healthy. We have a very strict guideline and protocols which were written and set forth by the physician that details, you know, the suitability of our prospective patient.
Okay.
You know, based upon medical history, based upon vital signs, based upon sort of the experience of our caregivers to ascertain whether these are folks that will benefit, but also can safely take the treatment.
All right. Well, what are you guys looking more for? Do you want more clients? Do you want more networkers out out there that are going to do that? You want them all?
Well, I mean, we want to grow the business. We want to do it safely. We want to do it in a way that creates a great brand and creates a great culture. I mean, there's going to be other folks that are going to copy us, are going to pop up. There's been a few already. But what we hope will set us apart is just your experience when you come in there and the way you feel when you leave. And hopefully that will turn into, again, more word of mouth, more, you know, sort of exponential growth.
All right. Well, how do our listeners reach out? Tell them where the locations are again and the best way to contact you guys to sign up for this or try it out.
Well, our website is hydrationstationatl.com. On Facebook, we're Hydration Station Atlanta. We have our phone number is 404-343-4973. Our first location is in Buckhead on 2221 Peachtree Road. That's in the shops at Buckhead. It's across from the old Justin's Restaurant.
Okay.
And our second location is in town Brookhaven, just about 5 miles down Peachtree. We'll be open there in April, just doing the build-out right now, and It's gonna be exciting.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on and informing us. Well, how about you hang out with us while we visit with our next guest?
I couldn't be happy.
Well, next up on Atlanta Business Radio, we have Tracy Ruth Creedy with S4B Social. Welcome to the show. You're sitting there patiently nodding your head, laughing at all the right points. So you're doing a great job so far.
I like it.
So tell us a little bit about your business and what you guys do.
Well, S4B Social, we are a social media online brand management company. I focus on SMBs, small businesses, basically maybe 1 to maybe 15, 20 employees. I've worked in the corporate world, like with Coke and Cox and stuff, and to get a decision made.
It's all the red tape.
takes like 45 gazillion years. But I like to sit down with the business owner and kind of really figure out what they want to do.
Mm-hmm. And I guess I can tell you're passionate. And sitting down with a smaller business, you know you're helping them grow and head towards something instead of all the corporate BS that you have to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you get started? Because there's a lot of people out there, they have small business, they hear and on the news, they're like, well, you got to be on social media, you got to do this and that. So then they're like, well, let's sign up for all of it and cast a wide net. How do you sort of reel them in and tell them, well, this is the most beneficial, this is going to give you the most ROI, and explain all that to them?
Yeah, basically, a lot of the companies I work with, they have a brand, like they've been around for 20 years, but they've never... They don't have a direction. Like they say, their kids say, oh, we have to be on social media, or every, like you said, everybody's like that. And so basically I sit down with them, I figure out, okay, what's your purpose to be on social media? If you just want to be on there and put out, you know, here's my kids at whatever, or and here's our company doing what, we have a special, a little, you know, promotion going on. So after I sit down with them, I do a 3-month, 6-month, and a year goal. And then we figure out, okay, this is what you want to say, and this is what you should say, and how often you should say it. And then these are the platforms you should be on. So, like, a lot of my clients, they want the older demographic.
Yeah.
So, like, Snapchat and Vine is not the appropriate one. But a lot of them, like, well, we have to be on Instagram. We have to be on Pinterest. But, like, say, that's really not beneficial for some companies.
Yeah, what are you going to put on Instagram?
Yeah, and it's also, like, bandwidth.
Yeah.
So, say, some of these people have a very small budget, and they may not be able to afford a me or a person dedicated for it.
They have the CEO's niece doing it.
Yeah, oh, my God. A lot of people do that. That really irritates me. Because they don't know what they're saying, you know what I mean?
Exactly.
I had this one client. They used to have a company to where they would post the most unrelated... Just
did you guys see what
engaging.
Miley did?
Exactly. And it was like something, what was it? It was promoting something they didn't even do, which made no sense because it was a waste of A, resources, and B, made them look kind of silly, like they didn't know what they were doing. What was I saying? I totally left my
mind. We were just talking about why they would have a presence basically in social media and which ones they wanted to use.
Okay, sorry, got distracted. So like a lot of mine, when I sit down with them, it's a very long meeting, and a lot of them don't know what they want to get out of it. I tell them to do baby steps, you know, because the bandwidth of one company may only be, okay, you want to do LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter, you don't need to be on all of them. Because a lot of it's very overwhelming to produce, A, the content, because every platform's different. Like, you can't say the same thing on Twitter that you say on Facebook or vice versa with LinkedIn or all the other ones. And say if you do an Instagram, you could do a video. Same thing with Facebook. So it's kind of, it's very overwhelming for them. And a lot of them, like if you're a plumber, you're a plumber.
Mm-hmm.
You're not a online marketer.
Yeah.
Which is, a lot of them think they are, but they're really not.
Well, definitely. Let's talk more about the content generation. Everyone loves that buzzword. Everyone wants content, and they want to get it any way they want.
Yeah.
How do you sort of direct these companies to the best outlet for their content?
Well, it's all about strategy. Like, if it's a certain time of year, say you're an allergist, that content for allergy is going to be key. You don't want to talk about, I don't know when ragweed comes out, but if it's pollen season, you talk about pollen.
Yeah.
And then... So when you, it's just all about like what they want to get out of it, like that month. If it's a bar and it's a big football bar, you promote the fact that you're the football bar. Or if you're a hydration station, I would assume in the summer and around certain festivals or if it's a big marathon season, you'll be pushing out more content than you would when it's not a key time.
But so should it be just content about... It shouldn't be content sort of like selling.
No.
It should be just sort of informative or...
It kind of like what I like to tell my clients is, A, you want to be the expert. And you want to put more content out there consistently because Google loves that. And you need to do all the different type of media, video, photos, just basic. You have to tweak it out. Like if on community involvement is huge. So that's going to build some of my clients that say, okay, we need a blog and you need to educate people. Like your company would be perfect for blogging. And then you need to and you need to become the expert and show that you're actually involved in the community. And also say, hey, these are our previous customers. Mm-hmm. They love us. These are the benefits. And just that gives you content. Like, you're going to do the expert, and then you're going to blog. So it's, like, different. So you're not pushing out, hey, we went to this soccer game every day. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So you want to vary your content, mm-hmm. and that's going to help drive users. Because it's all about
engagement.
Because you have to engage people for mm-hmm. people to want to follow you and actually get your information.
Mm-hmm.
Because it really isn't. It's a numbers game, especially with Twitter. It's mm-hmm. how many people you can reach out to through your network and then their network.
And then if they retweet it, if they share it, if, you know, that's huge about it because your exposure just, you know, quadruples.
So how did you really get into this? Like, were you always passionate about this? Did you, when you saw social media coming out, you're like, this is the next big thing. I'm going to do this? Or?
Well, I wanted to be a marketer when I was 17.
Okay.
I don't know why I decided this, but I love what I do. I started in, like, web design back in the day where you had animated GIFs. So mm-hmm. I'm older than I look. It's so, like, you know, produce the splash pages and, oh, my God. And then this is before the reviews online were around. I worked for Gannett, then I went to Cox, and I helped them start kudzu.com.
Okay.
And I remember so many, this is probably back in 05, telling all these businesses the word of mouth. And they're like, oh, yeah, everyone's just going to ask their neighbor. And then they didn't believe, you know, people are actually going to research online about a company. And 2 years later, they come crawling back to me like, oh, my God, you were so right. I remember one client said, well, you're just going to ask, you know, your mom or your neighbor. I don't know any of my neighbors. I haven't known one neighbor for the past 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not antisocial, but, you know, you have different schedules. And my mom lives in a different state, and she doesn't know what I would be asking her. So I go online. Like, everybody goes on Google. Mm-hmm. So, and then, well, back to the why I got into this. So I did, like, the online search. And then after that, all my clients, they were like, oh, what about this? What about this platform? You know, how do I get my brand out there? And it's kind of like you evolve. You don't really, you know, you're like a business development person, but then you expand your skill set mm-hmm. if you want to do that.
Okay.
And then most of my clients priorly was small businesses. And so I am doing what I'm doing
you
today.
You just evolved
yeah.
from there. It just
yeah.
happened organically.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So what's how's S4B Social going? How long have they been around? And who's your ideal client?
So we have been, well, I'm the, you know, the SVP of it. We officially became a company last year, but it's probably about like 5 years now.
Okay.
And then the ideal client for us is going to be a small business, obviously. I like to deal with people who are just starting their brand personally because it's easier for me to start it than it is to fix it.
Definitely. Always.
Yeah, because you just can't, you know, email Google and be like, oh, that's not accurate, da-da-da, it's changed. So if it's the beginning, it's always super fabulous. So the only thing I issue with small businesses is budget.
Okay.
And they don't really understand, but that's the education piece.
Definitely. Well,
so, yeah.
How are you getting in front of these companies and sort of reaching out to them?
Well, this is horrible to say, but I really don't push my company
mm-hmm.
on, like, the, you know, Twitters and stuff like that. I pushed out information, but I don't ask for customers.
Okay.
I think it's, I'm lucky to say it's based on reputation. Like, people call me in.
Referral based.
Referral, yeah. Which is, I love that part because I don't really have time to do client stuff. Really, I'd rather work with my clients and promote their business. And right now, obviously, more business is always super fabulous. But it's, we're not the people that go, you know, really aggressively push. I've been a salesperson for years, but I've never been the person that, you know, here's my services, do it now. I'm like, here it is. If you like it, you like it.
If we match and we fix and work together.
Yeah.
But I have to think that's really important, though, is that mm-hmm. relationship, because mm-hmm. not all marketing people can match with a company. And I'm mm-hmm. sure if you find a company, you probably have a huge referral network saying, well, if I can't help you, a bunch
exactly,
of people can.
Yeah.
I can find someone that can, that fits with your the way you do business.
Yeah, like if a company comes to me and they want to do, we do websites too, but if they want to do a crazy, complicated website, I refer it out.
Mm-hmm.
That's not my specialty.
Okay.
So it's like I'd rather give one of my friends business because that's what they do.
All right.
Or like iPad apps and stuff like that.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. Well, what's the future for you guys? What are you guys planning to do next? Or
Just expand. We've got a client in Colorado, Kentucky, and then North Carolina as well.
Okay, so you can do this. You can, from Atlanta, you guys, this is more of a, you don't have to be face-to-face.
No,
all the
time. It's awesome because, well, I don't get up this early ever. I work, you know, probably till like 11. I may work till 2 in the morning. Okay. It all depends. I could be at a coffee shop. I can be on the beach. As long as I have Wi-Fi, I'm good.
Sounds perfect, right? That sounds like a dream job.
It's pretty nice, actually. Mm-hmm. It's pretty cool.
Well, how do people reach out and get in touch with you and learn more about this interesting subject?
So our website is s4bsocial.com. You can email me directly. It's Tracy with IE at s4bsocial. We're on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, you name it, we're on it.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you so much for coming on and actually getting up. So
I know. I was like, oh, my God, 8 o'clock. Oh, this is horrible. But I'm glad to be here.
Definitely. Well, next up, we're going to be talking with Andrew Lechter with Studley, and he's the Executive Vice President and Branch Manager. Welcome to the show.
Thanks. Good to be here.
All right. Well, tell me a little bit about Studley. I know it has something to do with real estate, correct?
It does. And despite the name, we're not an escort service or workout. So, you'd be amazed how many eyebrows get raised when we introduce somebody, introduce ourselves, and we say we're from Studley. The company's actually named for our founder, and we're 60.
They couldn't talk him out of it.
That's his name. It's a cool name.
It is a cool name.
A lot of people would like it. But we were founded in New York 60 years ago.
Okay.
And the really unique thing about our company is that we strictly represent the interests of businesses that use facilities, office space, warehouse space, retail space. We have no conflicts of interest because we're only on the side of the user. Unfortunately, most of our competitors in the business derive a lot of their income from representing landlords. And often from being on both sides of the table. They represent landlords and they represent tenants.
It's a conflict of interest.
I don't know how you do that. You can't get a great deal for both sides.
Definitely. Well, you guys get to be the heroes then.
We like to be.
So tell me, just dig into the business. Walk me through how this works, how people find you, and how the process sort of works out for them.
Our business stems from some word of mouth, a lot of repeat business. Like law firms, for instance, are a big segment of our business. We've represented as a firm something like 75% of the 200 biggest law firms in the country.
Okay.
And law firms are very interesting because they all know each other by reputation. They know each other often by being on opposite sides or working on the same side of a deal. And the credibility that we have from representing several law firms mm-hmm. helps us get other business. The other big part of how we get business is being out there, is marketing ourselves, it's selling, it's a lot of personal relationships, mm-hmm. and it's selling, but it's more relationship building and providing knowledge to business owners, CFOs, decision makers over time, because most companies sign leases for 5 or 10 years, so this is not something that – this is not an issue that comes up all the time. You've got to be there and provide good information and serve as a resource and over time develop a relationship with those decision makers.
Well, it's definitely a relationship business, and it's got to be pretty cool to see, like, it's a small law firm. You put them in a space, and they say, well, in 5 years, we want to grow our business to here, and you get to sort of plan that and grow with them and keep their business growing and getting them a good deal at the same time.
Right, and you bring up a good point about growth. I sometimes say that cocktail party talk is, oh, what kind of rental? What was your rental rate? And the thinking is, well, if I'm paying $20 a square foot and somebody else is paying $25, I must have gotten a better deal. And cost is very important to every business, but there are dozens of other business points that have to be negotiated in a lease that help determine the quality of the transaction and whether it supports the goals of the business. The thing you mentioned, expansion. If there's a law firm that starts out with say 10 lawyers and over time their plan is to get to 30, well, under what terms can they add the space to accommodate those people? Do they mm-hmm. have to take it all at once, which means their costs are upside down from their revenues?
Yeah.
Do they have fixed rights to go to the landlord and get that space at predetermined times and predetermined prices? If not, and they've got 8 years left on a lease, the landlord has a lot of leverage over them.
Definitely. So basically, that's not, and you're trying to start a company. These people are trying to grow, and they're focused on their company. They're not focused on really the space. So you guys sort of take care of that pain point for them, and help them do that.
We essentially for smaller businesses, we essentially act as their real estate, their outsourced real estate department.
Mm-hmm.
And for big companies, and we represent a lot of Fortune 500 companies, we work with and in support of their in-house real estate departments. And our clients really include anybody who occupies facilities, whether it's a brand new company like Hydration Station, a Fortune 500 company, the big law firms I represent, nonprofits, pretty much any business that needs facilities, which is most.
Yeah.
And for service businesses, real estate is usually their second or third biggest line item expense. So if we're able to reduce that, we're really being creative to their bottom line.
Okay. So you talked about that you also rent out warehouse space and basically any kind of space any company could need. So you're sort of a one-stop shop for companies. If I had to have a company where I had to store stuff in a warehouse, also needed an office space, you guys could take
Correct.
Care of all that?
Correct. The majority of what we do is represent office tenants. But we do have people who specialize in industrial warehouse space. We have people who specialize in retail. And there are many businesses, you know, they're not a client, but take a company like a CVS or mm-hmm. a Walgreens. They have retail stores, they have headquarters offices, and then they have distribution centers.
Okay. How are you guys differentiating yourself? Because there's a lot of competition in your market. There's a lot of different companies saying they're doing the same thing you guys are doing. How do you guys sort of separate yourself from them, other than the fact that you guys give excellent service and get excellent referrals?
You're right. There is a lot of competition. I think the biggest thing, and that what people appreciate, especially in this time of kind of heightened scrutiny, is the fact that we are strictly on the side of the tenant. Our clients never have to wonder whether we're trying to split differences, whether we're selling them out and looking at any way other than to get them the very best deal. I don't know how I would feel if I were the CFO of a company and someone represented me and I went into a building, for instance, and then 3 months later, coming to work in the morning, I see their sign in front of the building saying, "For lease, call so-and-so." Because then they've gone from representing me as the tenant, supposedly getting me the very best terms, to all of a sudden doing the same thing for the landlord. And as I said earlier, it doesn't
work that way.
It can't work that way. The job of the landlord and the landlord rep, quite rightly, is to get the maximum rent, invest the smallest amount, and have the
and fill up all their spaces.
And fill up the space and fill up that building, whereas the job of the tenant and the tenant's representative is to get the best terms. Whether that's lowest rental rate, most tenant improvement allowance, most flexibility, and really with in somewhat indifference to whether it's building A, B, or C. And certainly we listen to our clients. If the client says, "I want to be in Buckhead," we're not gonna say, "Oh, you don't want to be in Buckhead. We should look at downtown." But if we're looking at the universe of buildings in Buckhead, the ones that work for them, we're really not concerned whether they go to the Monarch Plaza building or the Atlanta Financial Center or Terminus, because our job is not to fill a particular building. Our job is to fulfill the needs of our client.
Exactly. Whichever, put them where they want to be.
Right. And help them sort out the pros and cons of each building and provide them with a universe of great options.
Okay. Is there a certain key amount of employees a company has to fit into what you do, or do you guys do a wide range?
We do a wide range, but our specialty is really with companies that on the office space side occupy a floor or more of space, which is usually about 50 to 60 employees. Those tend to be more complex, more complicated transactions, and we have a lot of creative tools that we can deploy. The other thing that's nice about working with tenants of that size is they really make a difference in terms of the valuation of the building. Therefore, you've got more leverage in negotiating with the landlord.
Okay. Well, speaking of leverage, how's the market looking? Is it more of a tenant market, or do the buildings have a lot of power? Or
I always say, don't believe what you read. Every article, whether it's in the Wall Street Journal, whether it's in the Atlanta Business Chronicle, whether it's in Real Estate Trades, is written from a landlord's perspective, and you'll see articles that say market is getting stronger or market has been weak, and their definition of market getting stronger is vacancies down, rates are going up. Well, and people say that's a good market. Well, it's a good market if you're an owner, but there's a whole lot more tenants. So what you see depends on where you sit. The articles now are all saying the market is getting better, meaning moving in favor of landlords in their terminology. And I think it is. I don't think it's moving as rapidly or as dramatically as landlords would like you to believe, because the ownership community wants to create a sense of urgency. But it definitely is moving, and part of that reason is because you compare the Atlanta skyline to the way it was 6 or 8 years ago, there are no cranes in the sky, building offices anyway. So that is having an effect on pushing rental rates up. On the other hand, there's still a lot of big blocks of vacant space. There's a lot of underutilized space. Companies that the hypothetical law firm you mentioned earlier that started with 10 lawyers thought they were going to go to 30. And maybe they lease space for 30, but they're still at 10. Still at 10 lawyers. And when that lease comes to expiration or a couple of years before expiration, unless they remain very confident in their original plans that they're going to get to 30, if they're smart, they're going to hire someone like us, and we're going to say, let's approach the landlord and let's right size. Let's give up that extra space because it's costing you a whole lot of money.
Okay. Well, that seems like an easy conversation. I'm going to save you this much money. Come to me, and they're going to get a lot more return on their investment of getting you than they're probably going to pay you guys. So,
well, actually, the great thing about our service is that while we work for the tenant and our fiduciary obligation is to represent their needs, we get paid by the landlord.
Okay, that makes it really easy.
we're a performance-based organization, meaning we get paid on commission, and the commission is based on the value of the lease. And in order to keep a level playing field among the landlords, all the landlords want to get folks in my business, the real estate brokers, to show the buildings to their tenants. They all pay us according to the same formula, which is a great thing because that removes any incentive, again, because we don't represent the buildings, that removes any incentive for us to push one building or another. And the way we get paid is if a tenant is not represented, if a tenant goes directly to the landlord and negotiates a lease, the landlord retains the entire commission.
Wow.
If we're involved as the tenant rep, that commission gets split. So ask a business owner. There's a commission embedded in your rent. Do you want all of it going to somebody who is not on your side of the table, or a portion of it going to people who are on your side of the table and who are looking to drive the best terms for you?
Definitely a no-brainer. What's sort of like a gold nugget, something people don't really ask for that you guys provide in the questions that you ask that they wouldn't think to ask when doing this kind of transaction?
There are any number of things. I think traditionally the reason that companies address their lease is obviously if they're new and they need facilities, that's a good reason, or companies that are already in space, it's because the lease is coming up for expiration in 12 months, say. They need more space, they need less space, they don't like where they are. And all of those issues remain valid. There are also a number of other issues, kind of outside, external issues, I like to call them. There's a lot of CMBS debt, which CMBS debt is what helped put the economy into a tailspin a few years ago. The great thing about it is it's all public.
Okay.
We have researchers who were able to mine that data, and we can see that the debt on a particular building may be up at the end of 2015, and we may see that a big tenant has a lease that's up in the beginning of 15. There's no way in the world that landlord can refinance their loan with a big tenant who might move out in a year. So what we do is we take that information, talk to the leadership of the tenant, the company, and say, you can be in the driver's seat, and instead of real estate being priced because of location, 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 like we were all taught, real estate is priced based on cash flow, cash flow, cash flow.
And it's
the tenants who pay it. And if that big tenant has the desire to extend their lease, then our idea is that they should get the lion's share of the benefit of the added value that they're creating for that landlord, who then has to get a new mortgage.
That's huge right there. Just providing that simple amount of information that you guys have that they don't, that changes the whole, that flips the whole thing on its head.
Exactly. And for a lot of businesses, what we do is not just address problems, but we look at ways to make things better, often in ways that they didn't know existed.
Definitely. Well, what's the next five-year plan for you guys? What are you guys planning to do? How are you planning to grow?
Well, we're a privately held company. We like it that way, and we're going to keep doing what we've done for the last 60 years, which is stick to our roots, represent tenants. And as I said earlier, I think as companies realize that the quality of their transactions may have been compromised because the people they thought were representing them were also representing someone else, I think that's where they turn to a company like Studley and say, I want to make sure that you're totally on my side, because the economy may be getting better, but every business is tough.
Yeah, definitely.
Every business is battling to maintain their bottom line. And if they can have an advocate on their side like us, they seem to like that.
All right. Well, how do our listeners reach out and contact you guys for more information?
Our website is Studley, S-T-U-D-L-E-Y, studley.com. And my line is 404-504-0228.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being
thank
on.
Thank you.
Well, last but definitely not least, we have Jim Reese, the president and CEO of Atlanta Mission, and they're a great organization. They hold a close place to my heart. I used to live next to one of them, and they do some great work. So welcome to the show.
It's great to be here. Glad to be able to be with these great people and hearing all about their businesses. I use a little hydration station, I think.
Well, definitely. Tell us a little bit about Atlanta Mission for the people that don't know about it.
Yeah. Well, we've been around Atlanta 75 years.
You guys changed your name, though.
Yeah, we changed. We used to be Atlanta Union Mission, so a lot of people know us as Atlanta Union Mission. 3 years ago, we dropped Union, primarily because no one knew what it meant anymore. And in the 30s, it meant non-denominational, which we still are, but nobody relates it to that. And that we serve about 1,000 people every day across four campuses, men, women, and women with children. And we actually are celebrating our 75th anniversary. We started in 1938 with actually 20 beds in downtown Atlanta. Mm-hmm. And we have about 1,000 beds, again, across four campuses now.
Okay. Well, how did you get into this? I mean, it's a great thing. It's heartwarming. But how do you get into something like this and say, this is what I'm going to do? I'm going to be the CEO of this company.
Well, I didn't. And so I really spent, I think I like to tell people I spent, 54 years of my life, God getting me ready for what he really wanted me to do. I worked almost all my career in the business world. I was with General Foods, Frito-Lay, Honey Baked Ham, and I was CEO and on the executive board of Randstad, the large staffing company. Mm-hmm. And so left in 2005, and the Atlanta Union Mission was doing a search, and Sam Petway, who was doing that search, called me and thought it'd be a great job for my faith and experience. And I hadn't served or done anything at the mission. And as I went through the process carefully, to be honest with you, I didn't want to mm-hmm. just go do something good. Mm-hmm. I felt like I really needed to be a call from God. I felt like it was really three things that God said to me, which was interesting. I've not had him speak to me before, mm-hmm. but it was close. One was, I really need to be dependent upon him, which is intellectually easy to think about and hard to live. Two, definitely. I'd spent my whole life building great teams, and I love building organizations. I love people, and I thought, if you could build a great team for a ministry to the poor, mm-hmm. really to the least of these, that would be incredible. And then third was, I could have probably done just about anything. Yeah. And would you really go serve the poor, Jim? Would you really go do that in your city? And so started in 2008, and I love it. And it's the hardest job I've ever had, but really do enjoy it.
Well, I have to think that the years of business knowledge and acumen that you built up and the leadership that you built up there really helps an organization like this, because a lot of these organizations that want to help people, they start it out of the goodness of their heart, but sometimes the systems aren't in place to make them run as effectively and serve as many people as they can.
Yeah, we have, again, you could never argue there wasn't a day that we didn't do good work. The challenge for me and for our organization is to ensure we're doing absolutely the greatest work we can. And so the whole processes of how do you continuously improve, how do you really, truly... the truth of the matter is, it's interesting because, and you have to report in the business world quarterly and your stock mm-hmm. goes up or down based upon that. In the world I'm in today, our ability to serve people is, I tell people all the time, we play with live ammunition. Yeah. People die. People don't make it. This might be their last chance. So our need to truly do our work better and to understand what really takes to do it better is absolutely critical. So we've spent, you know, one, really enormously trying to build the strength of our team. You talked about our branding. You know, we went through a thing with an organization called Matchstick that did an incredible job for us on really reframing our brand in the city so people could think about us and what we were doing and our tagline of ending homelessness. And so, you know, that continuous drive to really improve. Because, you know, I'm sitting on the table with people who everybody, maybe not hydration station yet, but everybody else is waking up every day trying to figure out how to put you out of business.
Yeah.
Well, there's nobody in Atlanta waking up to say, you know, I really got to figure out how to put the Atlanta Mission out of business. And so, so it's like, but how do you create that tension that forces you to continuously get better?
Yeah, sort of that competition in the other industries.
Yeah.
So what services, everyone knows of the Atlanta Mission.
Sure.
They pass by your locations and everyone can say, well, they're doing some great work, but what really are you guys doing? What programs are you offering? Yeah. What are you doing for the homeless?
It's great. We really do the full continuum of care for someone who's homeless. So anywhere from Joe, a guy that we served 16 years under a bridge, he could come and spend the night with us. You know, our heart's desire is he wouldn't just spend the night, that he would choose help. But one is, for some, hope starts with just a warm place to stay, a warm meal, and somebody telling them they love them. And so we'll provide that for our men and women. So just the bare necessities of what I would call physical needs and survival, hopefully beginning to build a relationship. And then those, if you look at that, then the next phase obviously is we could have two or three tracks we'd love you to choose to go down to. One is maybe it's just you need a job and maybe you need training and you need to get your life back together. And so we have a job training program where we could help you really get trained. We're going to, you know, we're a ministry, we're a Christian ministry. Yeah. So we're going to, you know, give you a chance to kind of get settled and deal with that. And that's men or women and women with children. And so that could be one alternative. Truth is that about 60% of the people on the street have some sort of life-controlling issue, usually some sort of an addiction, not driven by them being on the street, but by another problem. And so we have a long-term recovery program where we have licensed and trained counselors who really work with you for 9 months to a year to get your life back together. And so you can go down that path and then get a job out of the end of that as well. And then we have transitional housing that once you've completed either one of those, you can stay with us for 6 months to 18 months to kind of get your life together. And so, you know, things that's exciting. So last year, almost 600 people went to work that came to visit us. So, you know, you see that transformation is exciting.
Definitely. Well, do you guys have any people that, like Coca-Cola or anything? We have a lot of big business that would sponsor kind of that kind of experience and then help with the training and sort of train them, be like, hey, you can do this for our company, and you sort of...
Yeah, you know, we have partners all across the town, and I, you know, I'd be remiss. You know, we get no government funding.
Okay.
So, and our budget's about $13 million.
Wow.
Every year. So,
community is really jumping up.
Yeah, you know, there's when you look across our community, there's about 35,000 people that will contribute to us on a yearly basis, and that could be an individual who honestly will get a envelope in the mail on Monday because they had $3 left Friday and they put it in there to us because maybe we saved their life.
Wow.
To someone who obviously would give a much larger check to foundations and corporations across this town. And so, you know, we couldn't do what we do without the people of Atlanta, to be honest with you. And our whole belief is, our vision statement is that we believe if we could create a city unified, we could end homelessness. I like to tell people, you know, we were all so incredibly excited and we brought the Olympics to Atlanta, which was great. What if we could end homelessness? What if our city on our watch could do that?
Definitely, just the awareness. Well, what do people really need to know that they don't understand? That they're driving down downtown Atlanta and they just sort of ignore everything around them. What would make them more aware and help them with that process?
That's great. I think, one, our website is atlantamission.org, and so you can go and hear some of the stories. I think a couple things that I would say to people. One is, this is somebody's son, daughter, mom, or dad, and it's so easy to walk by them. You know, one of the biggest challenges for the homeless is no one talks to them, to be honest with
you.
And so one is, I think, changing that perception is that they don't want to work, they're lazy, they're all that. And there's some that are that way, but it's not the majority of them. If I spent time telling you all the stories, I don't know where I'd be if I went through what some of them have went through.
Definitely.
And so I think one is, don't stereotype that this is, oh, where they're at. You know, we serve women and children, and I think, you know, people wonder, and it's the fastest growing group, by the way. And the challenge for women and children is, if you're a woman with children and you're on the street, DFACS takes your kids away, and every mom fights to keep their kids, so you don't see women and kids on. Right. So where they're at is in places they shouldn't be, places they're being abused, places they're being taken advantage of, homes they shouldn't be in.
They don't have any other choice.
No other choice, because they're going to lose their kids, and moms won't do it. You know, we're one of the few places that will allow someone to go through long-term recovery and keep their kids. Probably less than 10% of the organizations across the country would allow you to do that. And that creates more complexity. But we think God gives us a unique opportunity then to help the child and the mom.
Definitely. So what would you say just to people? Should people be giving more money to people on the street, or should they donate to Atlanta Mission? Because that's more of a directed overall goal.
You know, it's interesting. I think one is, I'd never sell someone not to give something to someone on the street, because you never know what God's going to do with that. I think you have to be smart. There's a lot of people out there that take advantage of that. You know, we all know that. I think in many ways when I'm walking the streets, I'm their worst nightmare, because when they see me, I give them that card and I go, you know, it's your lucky day. But I'll tell you a funny story. I had a guy I did that with, and he had been drinking all day. And about 3 months later, I do a Tuesday morning Bible study, and he gave me that card back.
That's pretty cool.
And he came, and I didn't recognize him. And so you don't know what's going to, you know, I always encourage people, give them something, you know, primarily if they need food, which, by the way, there's no reason that someone should go hungry in Atlanta. We have a community lunch. Anybody can eat. You know, we've had these incredible snowstorms. Just last week, Thursday, we fed 750 people during the day. So I would tell people, you know, carry around a McDonald's card, give them some, if they really want that, but I would direct them to help. Because truthfully, you're not helping them by perpetuating that form. And that's one of the challenges that that people face. But people have a strong heart. You know, I've given people money on the street. So, you know, I think you've got to weigh the situation and understand it.
Definitely, definitely. So you'd say everyone should come pick up a bunch of Atlanta Mission cards and start handing them out so people know where the location is.
Know where we're at. We're right downtown across from Centennial Olympic. And the truth of the matter is, I think if you talk to almost any homeless person in Atlanta, they know who we are.
Mm-hmm.
And so they would understand it. I think, I'm proud to say I think we do incredible work there. I think for the people to help, one of the things we've done this year is created a thing we call Partners in Hope. Because I think we really are a place that provides hope, and through the work we do, and that's an opportunity for people to give monthly. And one of the challenges when it's so cold like it has been, everybody thinks about the poor homeless people. Let me tell you what, the weather doesn't matter. They're homeless 365 days a year, and so what we're really trying to encourage people to do is provide hope each month, each day, throughout the year, and give $30 a month. You can help us take care of people by doing that. It helps us in regards to knowing that we can have a revenue stream that's around the year. Obviously, people give a lot more in November and December, and our needs are just as great in July as they are in November and December. So that would really be a big help. So, and you can realize you are, truly a partner in hope.
Definitely. People pay more for their Starbucks a month, so that's not much money at all, really, when you look at it. So what are you guys planning to do? What programs do you have coming up this year? What's 2014 looking like for Atlanta?
Yeah, we did our race. Every January we do a race. We started it, did it this year at Centennial Olympic Park. We had about 3,000 people on really one of the coldest days. That's an incredible day for the community where we run in the cold for those that spend the night in the cold. And that's always an exciting piece for us. I think for us it's continuing to engage the community in helping in areas that add the most value. One of the challenges in volunteering is everybody wants to volunteer, but, the trick is aligning the volunteers effectively to areas that would most help the people. And that's probably, when you talked about coming from a business perspective, it's hard to say to a volunteer, no, I don't need you. Well, I don't need you in this, but I could really use you in this. And so that, in fact, they're helping you achieve your mission rather than maybe their mission. And so I think for people, you know, praying for our people and all of us, to be honest with you, is a critical need. And I would say, you know, generosity in regard to the funding, because we can't do it without the city of Atlanta and the people. And as we look out over this year, we really are continuing to press to improve every one of our programs. We've worked hard with our children. We hired a director of children's services. We think we're uniquely positioned with our kids that stay with us for a year. We all can think of a teacher. It had an enormous impact on our life. We have the unique chance to have moms and kids together, so we can teach them both. And I just say to the, everybody out there as well, when I watch the moms from a graduation and their incredible willingness to fight for their kids, and, you know, it's interesting, when I was five, my dad left, so my mom was a single mom. So I have an appreciation for a mom that's willing to fight for their kids. And it's just so neat to see that if you stabilize a mom, give a place where she knows her kids are well taken care of, give her training, it's there.
She'll do anything.
They'll do anything. And so those are heartwarming stories.
That makes it all worth it right there.
Yeah.
So what do you guys need more of? Do you need more people contributing money? Do you need more volunteers? And how do people volunteer?
Yeah, you know, if you go to our website, is an easy way to be able to volunteer. That's obviously there. And, you know, we always have needs. You know, we have a thrift store in Marietta. We have thrift stores in Northeast Georgia. If you don't have money to give but would like to donate goods to our thrift store, that would be great.
That's Thrift Ministry, right?
Yep, Thrift Ministry, which really 100% of that all goes to the ministry as well in those communities where those thrift stores are. We have vouchers for people who need clothes or need things that they can come in and get that. So, you know, we serve the poor in that community as well. So it's not, you know, just there. But also, you know, a critical piece for people coming in off the street is clothing and all that. And so a big part of those donations provide for the people we serve as well.
Okay, well, that's great. So can you give that website so people know?
Sure. We're at www.atlantamission.org.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on and informing
us
about
here.
This. Well, thanks to all our guests today. It was a great show. This is Kevin Finn for all our guests today and everyone here at the Business Radio X family saying we'll see you next week on Atlanta Business Radio.